And welcome to a brand new episode of Inside the Ropes here in the main feed. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra. Hey Sondra, how are you?
Hey Kenny, I am doing all right. How are you?
I'm good. I am slightly hungover, but I'm okay. I'm coping.
As tends to be the case
when it's a day of the week that ends in day.
yep.
But before we get into the podcast and AEW and NXT and all that jazz, I do, of course, have to talk about some free beer, because free beer is the best kind of beer. Because we're coming
honestly, free beer is the best kind of beer.
It is. Like, who wants to pay for the beer when you can get some free beer first? And obviously with COVID just being an absolute arsehole, I thought I would talk about Beer 52. They're offering 8 craft beers sourced and created from the best breweries on the planet for free. And all you need to do to get this great offer is to go to www.beer52.com/ITR. And all you need to pay is the £5.95 for the postage. Beer 52 is the world's most popular craft beer discovery club. They've got over 150,000 members. They send a brand new case out every month. You can get cases from different countries. Like, the past themes have had beers from New Zealand and South Africa, Korea, the US, Europe. Beer 52 are an independent British company passionate about the UK craft beer scene, so they support it during this difficult period. But if, kind of like me, dark beer is maybe not your thing, you can choose a light option, and then that way you get that along with the award-winning beer magazine Ferment and a tasty snack as well. If you do change your mind, you can pause it or cancel it anytime. So if you want to take advantage of it and get some free beer, just go to beer52.com/ITR to get your first eight beers in a case.
8 cases would be excessive. I mean, like, this is already a pretty good deal. That would just be like, how are they in business?
Yeah, that would be a mistake. So luckily, it's just one case of 8 beers, and all you need to do is pay the £5.95 postage. So again, the web address is www.beer52, it's the numbers 52.com/ITR. And it is only available in the UK, so Sondra, you cannot take advantage of it.
Like, do you understand how upsetting it is to me, that we have a beer sponsorship and I cannot partake?
That's the breaks.
Because I live in America?
I mean...
Boo.
Boo America.
Boo America.
But we are...
Boo America, because I can't take part in beer52.com, damn it all.
That, I mean, at least they've got the .com. They're not doing the, as JR said, .co.uk.
That always cracked me out. He finally got it, like, after a couple years. Doesn't he now say .co.uk?
I think he's
back
to CO.
Or does he still not?
I think he's back to CO. He was at .co for a while. But anyway, so there is loads of wrestling chat to discuss. One of the things that I thought was weird, and obviously we'll talk about the show, was Wade Barrett. Now back in WWE doing NXT commentary. Were you surprised to see Wade Barrett doing it? I mean, you've obviously heard him do some commentary before, and because there's chat that he might come back and he might do this more often. Do you think this is a good role for him? Is this something he should do?
I think it's great. Like, I was definitely surprised because, I mean, I guess I haven't been following his career that closely in the past couple of years, because I mean, I think he's been kind of doing more acting stuff and not been as involved in wrestling. But I was really pleased to see him back. I think he's great on commentary. I've enjoyed his commentary in the past that I've heard at other places. And I think that he worked really well with Vic Joseph. I think they had a good rapport with one another. And I love the guy. I think he's great. I think he's super talented. He has a great voice for commentary, but he also has enough in-ring knowledge to explain stuff and make things feel important. So I was really pleased to see him back. It came out of nowhere, but I'm happy for him. And if that gets him a job back with WWE, I don't know what the status of his deal with them is, if he's like back or if it's temporary, because they did say it was a temporary thing. But I think he's also supposed to be back this coming week. Did they say that? Am I making that up?
No, he is going to be back this week as well. And I think the idea is he might be signing. So he might be signing to do this more often, which would be cool. Good for
I think
him.
that'd be great. Like, I think he does a really great job. I mean, they have other really talented people on commentary. So I don't know. Like, I like Nigel and Beth and Moro together, but I also like Wade Barrett. It almost feels so weird to call him Wade Barrett again. Like, he's been Stu Bennett for so long now. I mean, I guess
strange.
For his whole life. But but you know what I mean? Like, I got so used to calling him Stu Bennett after WWE. Because how long has it been since he left there?
He left in 2016, I think.
Okay, because I was thinking 4 or 5 years, so it's been a good while. But yeah, I mean, watching the show, I thought he did a great job. Did you enjoy his commentary?
I thought he was good, yeah. I've heard him do commentary before, obviously. But yeah, I think it's, I mean, he's 40 now. He's very clearly not go back in the ring, which seems to be a deliberate decision to not go back in the ring. So if he's not going
to
wrestle...
I feel like if he wanted to get booked and work in the ring, then people would book him to work in the ring. But he doesn't seem that interested in it.
No, he doesn't seem that interested. So, but yeah, good for him.
He's one of those guys, though, that, like, if he wanted to... Like, because he's not medically retired or anything, right? So if they wanted to do that thing that they love to do and involve someone from commentary in an angle or something, like, they could do that down the line. I'm not advocating that because sometimes those angles can just be kind of wonky. But you know what I mean? Like, if he needed to get chucked about or if he needed to be involved on behalf of somebody, he's still more than capable of doing that.
Yeah, for sure. Sometimes we just like to get chucked about. You know, it happens.
We all love it.
Or you're the one that chucks people about. Either happen. Anyway, another big thing that happened the last couple of days that was worth us talking about. You can hear us talk about Payback over on Patreon, but Paul Heyman is aligned with Roman Reigns, and he seems to be a heel. What did you make of this?
I was quite surprised by this. I mean, when Roman Reigns came back at SummerSlam... Which it took me a second. I was like, when did he come back? Oh, right. SummerSlam, the pay-per-view that we had 1 week ago before the pay-per-view that we had 1 day ago. But when Roman Reigns came back, I didn't necessarily get either babyface or heel vibes from him because since he was coming back and attacking essentially the two heels in the main event, it seemed like maybe he was going to be the conquering babyface Roman Reigns again. But yeah, at the end of SmackDown, to see Paul Heyman aligned with Roman Reigns, and to hear Roman Reigns say, and that's not a prediction, that's a spoiler, and then Paul Heyman say, believe that, I got chills. Like, I absolutely got chills to see the two of them together. It's not a pairing that I would have thought of, necessarily, but as soon as I saw them together, I thought, this is going to be brilliant. And it actually made me want Roman Reigns to win the Universal Championship. Like, what is happening in the world where I think that's the best option?
It's a strange time to be alive, but I mean, it was great. I did not expect it whatsoever. I'm lucky that in our group chat that we got that somebody, Chris, had said, watch the end of SmackDown and like right now and didn't spoil it. So
yeah, I immediately just went to Twitter to find out what was happening because I had no patience.
Ah, see, it was the Saturday morning, so I just like immediately watched the end of SmackDown and was pleasantly surprised. Do you think that is doing the Roman Reigns heel turn, like, can it still be a big deal now? Do you think they've left it too late to do it? What do you think?
I mean, I don't think it's going to have like the punchy impact that it would have had if they had Roman Reigns turn at like the height of his unpopularity, I guess, how to say that. Like, it probably would have made more of an impact had they done it a few years ago when he was being booed and he was on top and he was the guy and all of that kind of stuff. But I think it still does have an impact because Roman Reigns, having been gone for so long, his return felt like a very big deal at the end of SummerSlam. To me, it did anyway. And I've always been a fan of Roman Reigns. I think he's very good. And I think that he's been put in a position that is unfortunate in terms of like getting crowd support behind him. There are a lot of people who support him, but there are a lot of people who very vocally don't. And to have him come back and feel like a big deal was kind of cool to see because it felt like a big moment, right, in WWE history. And now to have him be a bad guy and to have the turn not be like, I attacked my brother or I attacked someone that you love or whatever, like to just have him be a badass and just be a bad dude atop the company, it seems almost more organic this way because I could see Roman Reigns being like, hey, fuck you, I came back from cancer and y'all cheered me for like a minute and then you still were like, boo Roman Reigns, or we don't want you to be on top, we don't want you to be the guy. And then, like, I take time off for my family for coronavirus and I get shit for it online. that's not cool. Don't really appreciate that. Now I'm just going to come and I'm going to be Roman Reigns and I'm going to be the guy and I'm going to be on top and y'all can deal. And I love that. Like, that feels like an organic character to me. And with Paul Heyman behind him, like, Roman Reigns was pretty unstoppable in the first place. And I'm just talking, like, in the world of the story of whatever. He seems unstoppable, man. And that's kind of how you build a big bad monster if you want to have him slain.
I'm curious who the babyfaces are going to be that go up against them. I mean, there is part of me that secretly just love the idea that AJ Styles has been, like, complaining about Paul Heyman on his streams for, like, the last 2 months.
About, oh, has
you know,
he?
Why he left Raw, and, like, it was Heyman's fault, and Heyman was a liar. And now here comes Heyman to SmackDown, managing the top guy on SmackDown. So I don't think AJ Styles is going to be happy about this.
No, not at all. Well, yeah, and that's the thing, is that Paul Heyman, you know, like, he's been gone. So I didn't expect to see Paul Heyman back for any reason anytime soon. And I think that was a big part of the surprise, too, was like, okay, well, Paul Heyman got fired from his job at Raw. It seems like they just wanted him to be away for a while, and apparently not. Like, he's weaseled his way back into the world,
well, apparently,
as Paul Heyman does.
Apparently, because they've got him on, like, a really high-paid talent contract, so, like, they feel they have to do something with him. They don't want him just kind of sitting at home
collecting all of their money. I mean, I'm not complaining. I think Paul Heyman's brilliant, and I think we've seen Paul Heyman with Brock Lesnar for so long that it's been the same thing for so long, and he's talked about how he's not gonna ally with anyone who it just doesn't fit, because he's talked in the past about, you know, his alliances with Cesaro and with Curtis Axel. I almost just said Michael McGillicuddy. What is wrong with me? I'm in, like, Nexus brain or something. But with Curtis Axel, and how those kind of fell flat because it was like, well, let's just stick Paul Heyman with a random guy. But sticking Paul Heyman with Roman Reigns does not feel like sticking Paul Heyman with a random guy. You know, like, it feels like this is a very deliberate partnership that, I don't know, could be really exciting. Like, I'm excited about a Roman Reigns thing, Kenny.
It's a good place to be. I'm excited as well. I don't really know where it's going to go. And you can hear us talk on Patreon about Payback, where we delve into more information about it. I did want to ask you as well about... So I'm assuming this is like a rib, and this didn't actually happen. So you know how they're saying that Kenny Omega was in the Thunderdome?
Well, there was a picture of him in the Thunderdome,
yeah,
yes.
But then he made a joke, didn't he, about, like, oh, you know, that was me, but it wasn't him, right?
No, it was just, I mean, it was a picture. We've seen that background picture before, like, on Being the Elite and stuff.
Yeah, because in my mind I was like, it's not him. I just can't imagine that Kenny Omega would be like, I'm going to apply for the Thunderdome.
But I don't think Kenny Omega would give a shit.
Kenny Omega has his own issues to deal with the women's division. But at least it's not a KKK thing. I mean, some of the things on the Thunderdome have been really... like, just stupid.
Well, because someone put up a picture of Benoit, too.
And, like,
at one point. And, like, the Fire Velveteen Dream one, I'm not going to lie, I got a little bit of a kick out of that, because I did. But, you know, I mean, people are definitely taking liberties with it. I'm curious how they, like, if they're going to edit that stuff out for replays.
You would imagine they're going to have to. Or they're going to have to figure something out, because they can't really have... you know, Benoit photos and KKK stuff coming up, so they're going to need to figure it out. In terms of the last week's shows, NXT and AEW, they were running different nights, but what did you think of the shows? Did you think there was one that was clearly a better show than the other?
I think I preferred NXT again this week. The tides seemed to be shifting. I thought AEW had some good stuff as well, but I don't know. Like, NXT, AEW seemed to be a lot of, like, tag matches, like, we kind of just need to get to All Out at this point.
Yeah, like, there was what, yeah, what, because the 8-man tag on Dynamite, I was just like, really? Like, is that, it kind of felt more like a dark match, because
it was good, the wrestling was good, but I don't think that it advanced or progressed anything.
No. Well, let's talk about NXT first. The big story, obviously, at the beginning was Karrion Kross coming out. He is injured, so he has to relinquish his title. And, you know, Scarlett ends up putting the hourglass behind the bell, and Doomsday's still coming, and all this kind of stuff. It sucks for Karrion Kross that he's injured.
It does suck for Karrion Kross that he's injured, and it sucks for NXT storytelling that Karrion Kross is injured. Like,
I feel
Keith
like
Lee has gone on to do some very nice things that we'll talk about at Payback and how relieved and happy I was that he beat Randall Keith Orton. But like, doesn't Keith Lee's title reign just feel like a waste at this point?
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, because I was thinking about this the other day, that the Karrion Kross Keith Lee takeover main event, to me, was one of the weakest takeover main events of all time. We talked about this.
Like, since the Drew McIntyre-Bobby Roode situation. Like, I would put it almost on... I don't know if it was quite that bad, but, like, it was in that same category for me.
Yeah, and then, like, there's this weird thing where, like, I don't think the Karrion Kross thing was working that well. Like, I feel like the idea of Karrion Kross was good, but the execution just didn't really seem to work. But maybe...
Because I think the initial presentation was like, whoa, this entrance is so cool. But it hasn't really gone much beyond that, right? It's still just like, we are spooky and have smoke.
We are spooky and we have smoke.
I'm all about the spooky smoke, but you need a little bit more, right? And I think maybe they were just kind of waiting for him to be champion and then have a reign and... they could build some more stuff there and he could be dominant. And now that is taken away from us because he's injured. So, I mean, that's obviously that's not his fault. That's not their fault. That's injuries suck. And this is just bad timing, right? Like when Finn Balor got injured, when he won the Universal title, like that sucked because he was supposed to be like the guy atop the company and he couldn't be because his arm got messed up. And now Karrion Kross's arm got messed up and it sucks. Right. But I don't know, like it feels underwhelming, but I guess it's also nobody's fault. It's just like Keith Lee wins both championships and then just gives up the one for reasons, to give people an opportunity, and people being Damian Priest just doesn't thrill me. So that's kind of a bummer. And then his title reign's so short, he gets beat by Karrion Kross. I get it. Keith Lee is moving to the main roster onto bigger, better things. But just, I don't know, like, we need to reset, I guess, and we will next week with the Iron Man match, but it's a bummer.
I mean, I wonder if Karrion Kross, maybe it's going to, in some ways, do him good to be absent for a while. I mean, the injury's not good, but maybe he'll come back and it'll click more the second time around. Sometimes when you get injured...
Maybe they'll have time to kind of like figure out some more stuff to do and make his return feel like a bigger deal.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe it could be a blessing in disguise for him down the line. But what do you
How do you feel about the idea of the Iron Man match next week?
There's part of it that fills me with dread because it's Adam Cole and Johnny Gargano, and them wrestling forever is not my thing. But I think that having the four of them in there and having Ciampa in there, I am interested in it. I think it could be great. And I don't know who's going to win. I can't call it, so I'm pretty confident that they're going to make it good, but and I'm, to be honest, any of them being champion, I'm probably more interested in than I would have been with Karrion Kross.
I kind of am too. Like I hope that we don't go back to Adam Cole as champion, just because, I mean, he was great. Like, he was really great as champion, but I feel like we had that for so long, and I don't know. There's part of me that thinks that a Prince Balor championship reign could just be really cool, like as kind of a second, like almost like a legacy reign, but it wouldn't really be a legacy reign. It wouldn't really feel like when Charlotte came back and won the title, because like he's actually in NXT, right? Like he's the established veteran of NXT. Johnny Gargano as champion, I'm never going to complain about because he's Johnny Gargano and I love him. I kind of almost hope that Ciampa wins it though, because he never lost that title, and he and Goldie were so synonymous with one another. And I feel like Tommaso Ciampa's story is not finished in NXT. Like, if they're going to still have him there, I don't know what you do with him if you don't have him in the main event scene. So maybe this could be an opportunity for Tommaso Ciampa to do some other stuff. I don't know. Like, that, the match itself, I'm probably looking forward to more than you, just because an Iron Man match sounds like the kind of thing that you just immediately do not want, because it's an hour long and you're going to be stuck sitting there for an hour.
I like an Iron Man match if it's got falls. Like,
and that's the thing. I hope this one has many, and especially because it's a four-way, I'm guessing that we'll get multiple falls to keep it interesting.
Yeah, if it's Rock Triple H style Iron Man match, I'm here for it. If it's Bret Shawn, you're going to lose me.
Kill it with fire, yeah.
Kill it
I
with
know.
fire.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and I'm kind of like you because we don't know who's going to win, and there doesn't seem to be a clear option. I think that makes it a little bit more exciting.
It does. Something else that happened in NXT that kind of came out of nowhere and was a big surprise was Breezango beat Imperium to become the new NXT Tag Team Champions. I can only imagine, Sondra, how happy you were about this.
I was so happy, Kenny. So happy. And the thing is, I watched NXT. When did I watch NXT? I watched it on the Thursday, I think. And so I had the opportunity to have it spoiled for me, basically, right? Like, because I hadn't really been on Twitter a ton because I was pretty busy, but I figured if Breezango had won the championships, that was something that would have been spoiled for me, right? Because title changes are exciting and it tends to come across timelines, and no one in the Inside the Ropes Facebook community posted it as a spoiler, like, out there, which they had every right to do after 3 p.m. on the Thursday. I didn't have it spoiled for me. And so I'm watching it and I'm like, okay, there's no way Breezango are gonna win here. Imperium are gonna stay the champions. It's gonna be fine. But, like, bummer, because I love Breezango. And when they won, I screamed and I got so excited and I'm so happy. Because weren't we just talking, like, last week or 2 weeks ago, how I was like, it's just a bummer that Breezango are never going to be the guys, right? Like, they're never going to win the championships. They're there to add some spice and some variety to the show, but I just don't think that they're ever going to go with them. And then they went with them, and I'm so happy about it.
I was really shocked that they did it, but I mean, look, in terms of giving people a loyalty reign, these guys deserve a little loyalty reign. Do you know what I mean? Because if you don't,
Absolutely. And this doesn't even, like, it doesn't have to be a loyalty reign. It can be a great reign.
but you can get the reign for loyalty and then make it into a real reign. Do you know what I mean? And
Absolutely.
they're so good. I mean, I really hope they go full wacky mode and we get vignettes again.
I hope so too. I mean, they've always been great, right? But they have felt rejuvenated since they came back as Breezango in NXT, at least to me. I know that I'm biased and have hard eyes for them forever, but I think them switching up their entrances and them, you know, killing it and all of the backstage promo stuff that they've done, like, everything they've been handed, they've been really great. And their wrestling is so good. And that double leg drop from the top, like, oh, like, you're gonna totally compress your spine with that move, and it's not smart to have that as your finisher, but also it looked really cool.
It was. I'm excited for them, and I really hope that we get full. I'm sitting right now beside me in my office. I bought these access 1 year. It's fashion police violation forms, so I have them on me right now. So I'm really hoping that we get that kind of stuff because Breezango are great character wrestlers as well as being good in-ring performers.
I
So I
mean, I
hope
feel
we
like
steer
maybe
into
going
that.
back to being fashion police might not be the best idea right now.
Well, they can evolve. They could be fashion mounties.
Yes.
Anyway, also you mentioned Ciampa earlier on. Ciampa actually essentially turned heel on this show by battering the shit out of Jake Atlas, and it just kind of felt like right? Like it just felt like it was kind
I
of
mean, he
him.
does feel better as a heel. It also kind of seems like, okay, you're a baddie now. That's fine.
I
Like,
mean,
are there any good guys
in the world or in WWE?
in NXT?
Oh, in NXT. Jake Atlas, he's a good guy.
Well,
Breezango, they're good
yeah, but I mean,
guys.
Jake Atlas comes out to lose to other people, which is a bummer because I think Jake Atlas is great.
I think Balor's a good guy. No?
Is he? Oh, okay.
I think so.
It's hard to tell.
And then Adam Cole kind of feels a bit babyface-ish, but
Yeah, but
then.
Undisputed Era are definitely still heels.
Yeah. It is a problem.
Because I don't know, like, I'm not mad. I think Tommaso Ciampa works better as a heel because I think that, you know, when he's being psycho killer, I will murder you with a crutch, whatever, like, that is when he's most effective, is when he's like angry beardy man, right? But as this was happening, I was just kind of like, but you were like the one baby face in that match, like in the match next week. And now he's not. Now it's all four heels.
I'm fairly certain that Balor is a babyface because he faced
Okay.
Timothy Thatcher, who was a heel.
Oh, that's right. He did. But the fact that I'm like not 100% sure, that's not a good thing,
No,
right?
there should be far more clarity on having babyfaces. And then, does that mean that Gargano and Ciampa are now on the same side? I mean, please, dear God, do not let them fight again. Like, no more fighting between them. And like
No,
a.
maybe they'll be in an alliance again. for a minute?
Maybe.
Because an alliance, like, I don't want them to be like a tag team again necessarily, but maybe they're back on side and they've put their issues aside, and if it can lead to not a feud between the two of them for another year or so, that would be great.
I'm keeping every single part of my body crossed that I can. We also got Santos Escobar retaining his NXT Cruiserweight title over Isaiah Swerve Scott, but we saw Breezango and Joaquin Wilde and Raul Mendoza get, having a fight on the outside. So I kind of, although the Cruiserweight scene has not really been for me, I do like the idea of Santos Escobar and his faction and Breezango involved. Like I think there could be some good stuff there between Breezango and Escobar's lackeys.
Yeah, no. I mean, if Legado del Fantasma wants to be the first kind of like challengers to the tag championships now that Breezango have them, I'm really in for it because we've seen dissension between Tyler Breeze and Santos Escobar before, right? Like over the Cruiserweight title. And I think there's kind of an end story there. I think that those teams have kind of faced each other enough that it feels like they have unresolved beef and now there are titles on the line, and I think that's cool. I really like the faction and it makes me more interested in the Cruiserweight Championship again, which is nice because in my heart of hearts, I just really want to be interested in the Cruiserweight Championship. And Isaiah Swerve Scott is great, but like if he would have won here, I don't know what the point would be because I think Santos Escobar and his, hot Latino stable, I'm a big fan of, and I want them to become more of a thing so that Undisputed Era isn't the only faction in NXT.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good for them to have some opposition, and I mean, I'm very glad that Santos Escobar kept the Cruiserweight title here. Very glad, very very glad.
Me too. I like Isaiah Swerve Scott. He's great, but like Santos Escobar.
We saw Kyle O'Reilly batter Drake Maverick in a match, which then afterwards we saw Killian Dain come out to clear the ring, and then we had
And then also batter Drake Maverick because everyone just batters Drake Maverick is the moral of the story.
because then it was like a tease that they're going to be pals, and instead we just saw Killian Dain batter him. So,
But nope, it's just Killian Dain being angry at literally everyone.
what was the point in this?
I mean, that's an excellent question. Drake Maverick is a fool? Is that the point? Like, he's gotta turn heel soon, right? Like, he's gotta get sick of being battered. He needs to. You know what? Drake Maverick should join the Robert Stone brand. That's what I want to happen.
Wouldn't they be too similar if they were heels?
Yeah, maybe. But can you imagine the smarm factor of like both of them?
I mean, it would be far better than the underdog, plucky babyface Drake Maverick.
It just feels wrong at this point. And I liked underdog, plucky, whatever, Drake Maverick more than you did because I was trying to put aside all of my Rockstar Spud feelings. But now, like, this Drake Maverick is just a buffoon. Like, he comes out, and they even say on commentary, they're like, he has more heart than brains because, like, he does. This is not smart. Like, he's not doing well. I think he needs to, if he doesn't join the Robert Stone brand, I feel like he needs to find a partner or someone to work with. Like, unfortunately, EC3 is no longer with us in the WWE and is allowed to be a person again in Impact. But if he can find someone to be pals with, to kind of like go against people, like, I like seeing Drake Maverick in the ring. I like seeing him wrestle. I like seeing him on my television. But I don't like seeing him just be the guy that gets beaten up because then very quickly it's just going to be like, dude, what's the point of you? And he's too good to be a dude, what's the point of you guy.
It's, I think the lesson here, everybody, is if you want to save your job and turn around, the Twitter video probably wasn't the best idea long term, because they seem to not have his best interests at heart.
Well, no, I mean, it was about the moment of rehiring him. And it was about, I mean, I thought the Cruiserweight tournament was great. I thought they used him super well in that. But you know, WWE, like, they love a moment and they don't love follow through.
But luckily for you, the main event of the show was right up your alley, Io Shirai and Rhea Ripley against Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez. They main evented the show. Raquel and Dakota Kai got a dastardly, dastardly win. I thought this was a really good main event, and if you told me like 2 months ago that these four women would be main eventing a tag match in NXT. I don't know if I would have believed it, but I thought they did a really great job here. What did you think?
I thought it was great. I was a little bit surprised that it was the main event, honestly. Not because they don't deserve it, because they're awesome, but I mean, the tag titles not being the main event, I thought was interesting. And just kind of an interesting commentary on where NXT views the tag title scene, like in relation to other divisions that they have. I'm never going to complain about a women's main event. I thought this was awesome. And I really liked the match. Obviously, all of them are great. Like, Raquel Gonzalez maybe isn't as good in the ring as the rest of them, but I think she's such a good, like, big monster presence that it definitely worked for me. I like the interplay between all of them. I still, like, I want to see Rhea Ripley versus Raquel Gonzalez. I keep wanting to say Reina Gonzalez. It's not her name anymore. But I want to see Rhea Ripley versus Raquel Gonzalez. Mercedes Martinez getting involved in pulling Rhea off the apron. And it looked like she hurt her knee, and I really hope she's okay. But kind of furthering the Mercedes Martinez-Rhea Ripley feud. I like that Rhea has so many opponents right now. Like, she's not in the title scene. She wants to be. She's made it clear that she wants to go after the title. But I like that they're putting obstacles in her way so that we can kind of hold off on Rhea versus Io again. Because I don't want Io Shirai to lose the title right now. And I wouldn't want Rhea Ripley to just lose, because then, like, she's lost a bunch and that's not good. So I like the fact that they're having, I don't know, interwoven storytelling is one of my favorite things. And I think they're doing it so, so well here. And, like, I want to see the big Hoss fight between Rhea and Raquel. And I want to see the big Hoss fight between Rhea and Mercedes. And, like, I'm clamoring for these matches, Kenny. I'm clamoring. I'm so excited about it.
But it's good logical storytelling. It's another example of why NXT's women's division is so, so much better than the opposition's women's division.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I thought NXT was a good show this week. There was... rarely do I think NXT is a better show than AEW, but I thought it was kind of even. But the fact that I think it was even for me is a pretty good thing. And the Breezango winning the tag titles was definitely the highlight of the show for me.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, I thought it was a solid show all around. I did laugh when Shotzi Blackheart ran over Robert Stone again too, and ended up facing Mia Yim, which was strange, but I was here for it. Like, yeah, there was nothing on NXT that I really didn't like. I guess, other than Drake Maverick feeling kind of pointless. It was good to see Killian Dane again, I guess. But yeah, no, overall, like, I really enjoyed NXT again this week. They're on a little bit more of an upswing for me right now, which is great.
Over in AEW, we had Chris Jericho in commentary. He was an absolute riot. I was laughing so much.
He's so funny.
So good. We kick off the show, though, with a gauntlet match to see who faces Omega and Paige at All Out. Start off with the Young Bucks against the Natural Nightmares. They obviously get the win, and then it becomes the Young Bucks against Best Friends, and then as they're setting up for the Meltzer Driver, Hangman Page shows up, grabs Nick Jackson's leg to prevent him from doing the move, allows Trent to roll Matt up and score the pin. Page wouldn't make eye contact with either of the Young Bucks, and he walked away as the Bucks are raging, and then FTR would end up as the last team beating Best Friends when Dax targeted the left knee of Chuck Taylor, which is really good old school psychology, and FTR were the winners. There's a lot to unpack here, Sandra.
There is a lot to unpack here. I don't know, like, a tag team gauntlet wasn't something that I was super interested in, but as soon as, I think especially because it started with the Young Bucks, and there is just something in my brain that when they are on screen, I have a lot of difficulty paying attention. So when Adam Page took the Young Bucks out of the match, I was like, thank you to my Lord and Savior, Adam Page. And I appreciate the fact that the Young Bucks have been dicks to you forever and you don't want them to win. That makes sense to me because they're dicks. And obviously we saw the confrontation later in the show, I'm sure we'll talk about, but FTR winning makes absolute sense. I think it was, you know, having Adam Page get involved was a clever way of having the Young Bucks lose without feeling like they just got beat by Best Friends, because it felt like, you know, it was due to the interference more than the Young Bucks just failing, I guess, because Young Bucks and FTR is going to be that confrontation that, like, that's the big match, right? Like, that's the one that we've been building to for so long, and I don't know when we're actually going to get it, but I think they're doing a pretty decent job of stringing it along. And I mean, FTR winning makes me happy because I love FTR. I think they're great. So yeah, like, I was pleased with the result. I was pleased with the storytelling in the match. It was good overall.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to include this now, but later on in the show, we saw the Young Bucks basically like kick Adam Page out of the Elite. And the thing that's difficult for me to comprehend is that, like, the Young Bucks just seem like arseholes. Like, to be around, like, they're, you know, they don't like that he was, I mean, he did fuck them over here, so fair's fair. But
he,
like,
did fuck them over, but, like, they've been dicks to him for so long.
They have, and he, and
they called him a jobber.
Which is, like, he's a champion, and you're not. But then that actually does play in to the idea that they think the only reason that Paige and Omega have the tag belts is because of Omega. So it does mm-hmm. play into the story. I thought that, I mean, it wasn't the most, like, high drama moment of the leg holding, but I almost kind of liked that that was quite subtle, and then it played out throughout the show. But yeah, I'm here for FTR versus Omega and Paige, with the Young Bucks, you know, not happy with Paige. I think it's a really good story, so I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes. I also thought that having fans at this show really added to the atmosphere. What did you think of the socially distant fans that AEW had?
Yeah, I think it worked. From everything that I've seen and read, and, like, from accounts of people who've been in the arena, they're doing everything as safely as possible, requiring masks, requiring testing, like, all of the stuff. So I think it's great. Like, it's really nice to see fans again, and it feels more alive, and it feels more like a wrestling show. And again, like, if you can figure out a way to do this safely, then I think it's great. Yeah, I mean, as far as Adam Page and the Young Bucks confrontation, I was, like, actually yelling at the Young Bucks. I was just like, you're such elitists, I hate you so much. And like, I want Adam Page to just batter their faces, man. Like, I don't like them, and I'm really intrigued by the Kenny Omega, Adam Page, and FTR match, because I still think that we're gonna get Adam Page joining FTR. Like, I really think that that's going to happen. I just don't know, like, how does that work if FTR beat Kenny Omega and Adam Page? Like, is Adam Page going to be pissed? Are they going to lose because of Kenny Omega? Like, are the Young Bucks going to fuck him up? Like, ah, there are so many options. There are so many options of ways this could go. And I'm totally here for it, because do you think that they're trying to turn Adam Page heel?
Well,
do they understand that he is the babyface of the situation?
Well, this is going to be my question, because if it's going to be between FTR and Paige against Omega and the Bucks, to me it's quite clear who the babyfaces are. But I don't know, are we in a bubble, do you think, of people who, you know, the Bucks are not, like, catered to our, you know, style of wrestling or whatever. So, like, maybe the majority of people... But then, surely people
want
Paige to be
the babyface. I was asking a friend of mine this last week. Who is a big Young Bucks fan. Like, he loves the Young Bucks. And I was asking, because, I mean, he listens to the show, so he's like, you know, when I say being the elitists, like, it does seem like they're the heels, because they have been such dicks. Like, so it does seem like, I don't think it's just us in a bubble of not really being the biggest Young Bucks fans. I think that's the story that they're trying to tell, but it almost feels like having Adam Page be such an antagonist almost makes them both heels. Like, I don't know. Like, to me, Adam Page is being just, like, badass babyface, like, Steve Austin type dude. But I don't know.
I mean, I have faith enough in the booking that they're going to make it make sense. I don't think it's going to be one of those things where, like, they're going to... I feel like if the Young Bucks know that, you know, they're playing the characters a certain way, I feel like I don't feel like we're going to get the rug. It's not going to be like a Becky Lynch SummerSlam 2018 moment.
No, no, no. Well, and I think the fact that both of us are still very, like, hooked on the story is a good thing, right? Because sometimes, even if alignments, like, you are a heel or you are a babyface, sometimes if those aren't clearly defined, it can still work if the story is good enough. Like, look at Triple H and Kurt Angle on Retro ITR right now, patreon.com/insidetheropes, if you want to hear us talk about that. Like, neither one of them are baby faces, but we're really into the confrontation because the story's so good. And maybe that's kind of what they're doing here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely intrigued, and I feel confident enough at where it's going to go. I just love Adam Page so, so much.
I do too. He's so good. Like, remember when we were underwhelmed by him at first, before he was, like, fully cooked Adam Page, who was awesome? Like, he just needed a little more time.
He did, and he's my fave. We then later on the show saw Lance Archer beating up Sean Maluta, and then right after the match...
Which I was not expecting to see Sean Maluta. Didn't realize he is not with WWE anymore.
Yeah, because when he came out, I was like, I'm sure this guy was either in a Cruiserweight Classic or he was somewhere.
Yes. He was in the Cruiserweight Classic, and he was on NXT a little bit.
Okay, yeah. But then the real story here was not the squash match. It was that after the match, so there's going to be another casino battle royale at All Out, and Jake Roberts and Lance Archer are in the ring. Then Taz came out with Brian Cage and Ricky Starks. Taz in that baseball cap, man. Like, I feel like Taz, we need to take Taz out, Sandra, and style him.
Taz could use an Ahmed Johnson shopping trip.
And we're here, everybody. Just mm-hmm. we might need to quarantine when we get there, but we will then happily take him on the trip.
That's true.
And then Darby Allin ended up coming out. So there's a whole kind of thing about who could win the Casino Battle Royale. Darby Allin, Starks or Cage, Archer. The fans are pretty into Archer and Cage kind of facing off. I thought they did a pretty good job here in kind of making me care about the Battle Royal, and I just really hope Darby Allin wins it.
I really hope Darby Allin wins it too. The thing here is that I think the promos are good, and I think that Taz and Jake the Snake are interesting. The problem for me is that it feels more like Taz versus Jake the Snake Roberts than Lance Archer versus Brian Cage. Like, it feels like Lance Archer and Brian Cage could be literally anybody. Like, any big dudes could be in this position, because I don't really know anything about Brian Cage specifically, and I don't know much about Lance Archer specifically, and I've been fans of them in other promotions, but I think this is something that AEW does a little too much, is having the old dudes as managers without letting the personality of the actual wrestlers shine through. And so, like, I enjoyed the segment and it did make me excited for the Battle Royal, but it just kind of feels like Lance Archer and Brian Cage are like the big playing pieces between Taz and Jake the Snake. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you don't feel like the attachments to the legends are doing as much for the young guys as it should be. It's more just people are focused on the old guys.
Yeah, and like, I'm happy to see Taz. I love Taz. We know this. Like, I'm happy to see Jake the Snake. He's great. But I kind of would like it to be a little bit more about the dudes that are actually fighting.
We also got a video.
But Darby Allin's awesome, and I hope he wins.
Hard same. We got a video package on Hikaru Shida and Thunder Rosa for the pay-per-view. They signed the contract. I thought they did a really fun video package here that made this match feel big. And for an AEW women's division match to feel big is something I didn't think I'd be saying.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's unfortunate that it takes bringing in a champion from another promotion to make the AEW women's match feel big. But I think this is a really cool thing that they're doing, though. Like, they had Billy Corgan actually on the video package saying, hey, yeah, like, we reached an agreement between our two companies because we thought that champion versus champion would be a really cool idea. It feels really old school and territory style, right? Like, in WWE, you would never see this. You would never see, like, the AEW champion fighting the WWE champion. It's not a thing. I think in retro we did, because we saw Taz as ECW champion fighting, he fought Triple H, right? So you used to get that, like, maybe a little bit more, but yeah, nowadays it's not something that you see in major wrestling companies. So it was kind of refreshing to see two promotions working together for like a big match promotion. And I'm excited. This is actually one of the matches I'm looking forward to most on All Out, just because I love Thunder Rosa and Hikaru Shida is great. So I'm intrigued by champion versus champion. I just wish that AEW had more of a women's division to build its own contenders, but maybe we'll get there. Like, I think I can't remember if I compared it to Asuka versus Mickey James before, but this is kind of what this feels like, right? Like, we don't have any contenders, but we're going to bring in someone from the outside who's going to be great, and it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it's a very good comparison, actually, for Asuka, Mickey James from NXT. My favorite thing on Dynamite, though, was the contract sign with MJF and Jon Moxley. I thought this was just
this was a blast.
Incredible. Like, MJF having the tennis balls on his walker and stuff, you know, trying to ban the paradigm shift, all the elements to it, down to Nina smiling in the background, were just great. And, like, you know, he's MJF saying, you know, you idolize people like the Sandman, New Jack, and Onita, who are hot garbage. And I was studying Buddy Rogers, Ernie Ladd, and Tully Blanchard. This was so great. I'm so into this main event.
I'm so into this main event, too. Like, I'm really, really into this main event. And I think MJF played his role great. I think Jon Moxley being kind of disaffected because he knew that he had added page 17, in which he gets to face the lawyer. I'm so here for it. I'm here for the shenanigans. I'm here for John Moxley. Who is the lawyer?
Smart Mark Sterling. I think he's like on Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins' podcast or something.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I do know who that is. By name. I haven't seen him wrestle, but yeah, like that's it's just a fun little dig, right? Like the babyface not being completely stupid. Because you'd think like MJF thinks he's gotten one up on John Moxley because he's like, I'm gonna ban your paradigm shift and I'm gonna take away your biggest offense in your arsenal, so I'm definitely gonna win the championship. And John Moxley's like, I have enough faith in myself, even without the paradigm shift, that I can beat you. But also I wanna get my hands on your lawyer because your entourage is just so annoying. And it's gonna give us a chance to see John Moxley look like a badass going into the match. I expect shenanigans. I love shenanigans in this sense. Like the whole thing is just really fun. And I think the two of them being such different characters, like MJF being posh and smarmy and ridiculous, and John Moxley just being like a dude, is it's just working. Like everything's firing on all cylinders with this. It's a lot of fun.
Then we had a segment later in the show that basically set up this 8-man tag at All Out. It was going to be Dustin Rhodes, QT Marshall, Scorpio Sky, and Matt Cardona against the Dark Order. So I know you love the Dark Order, and you're probably going to want to wax lyrical, but I want to just talk about why I think this just isn't working for me. Because every a lot, I mean, I really liked when Brody Lee won the title last week. So I was kind of with Dark Order, I always feel like something will happen, I'll go, I'm back in. And then I immediately get taken back out. And I think it's because I just don't get what it is it's supposed to be. And I put a thing on Twitter and I was like, do you guys get this? And it was like 50-50. Like, so a lot of people do get it. But the thing that people kept saying as a sort of a, like, here's why you should like them, is they're really funny on BTE. That's the reason, right? And I'm like, but I've never once, when they've been on this TV show, been told they're funny, seen them be funny. They don't have any sense of humor. They're a cult that are trying to take over. So
No, they seem like just a bunch of NPCs, really. Like they're not coming across as charismatic or great. This is someone who I like the Dark Order in concept, but having not watched BTE, I'm kind of with you in the sense that I love Brody Lee and I love him as TNT champion and I love him as a leader, but I don't think that Dark Order on the program come across as all that charismatic. And I think maybe like just show us some of the BTE clips. Like just show
yeah,
us them.
because it's like, I can't think of an example, but it's like, so say we were watching Retro, right, and we were watching DX. I know you hate DX, but just go with it. So if we were watching DX and DX came out and didn't do crotch chops, didn't do suck it, and didn't do any juvenile humor, and they came out just as like regular wrestlers, and Sondra was like, why do you like DX so much? Like, they're just
I mean, I would probably like them more, to be honest.
But say you were like, oh, why do you like them? They're really bland. And I was like, oh, on this internet show, they do crotch chops and they do all this stuff. And it's like, but you've never seen it, so how are you supposed to be sold to that? And it's like, then you've got Brody Lee, who is dressed like he's like a world champion. He's like a Nick Aldis type world champion. He's dressed as, who's really
Looks great in a
eloquent.
suit.
He does, but then he has this weird faction of jobbers around him, and then. So he's then we've got the thing where he's screaming at one of the guys, and there's no explanation as to why that guy's the problem, but okay, we're
Yeah,
going
I
with
don't know
it.
why he's such a dick to his underlings. And that's been a thing, right? Like he even in the first vignettes was just like awful to the Dark Order. Like he's very openly abusive to them, so I don't
And then Colt Cabana, so the whole story is supposed to, is being that Colt Cabana is, he was losing, so they were like, join us if you want to win. They've got a horrible win record, so why would you want to join them? But fine, because now, Brody Lee's got the belt, so say you go with it. But like, Cabana, who is supposed to be a good guy, the last time I checked, he apparently is fine with the fact that Brody Lee and the Dark Order battered the Rhodes family last week. Like, he doesn't have a problem with
Because I
that.
guess, like, he's a good guy who's fallen in with a bad crowd is supposed to be the idea.
Well, tell us that story, my God. Like, just give it. I just feel like when I'm watching it, I'm going, there's 12 different things going on. None of them look like they go with the other. And then, like I say, because I always hope that maybe there's something I'm not getting, right? I'll sit here, but what am I missing here? And if the biggest sell that people can say is they're really funny on BTE, I
Well,
don't.
then make them funny on Dynamite.
Because, like, the gimmick is not supposed to be them being funny.
No.
The gimmick is supposed to be... That's like saying, oh, the Ministry of Darkness are really funny. Are they? Why? They're not meant to be funny. So, I just don't think it's... And, look, at this point, it's like I would be begrudged to watch BTE to find out that they're funny on there. Like,
I kind of have, like, intentionally not watched some of the segments. Like, just because I'm annoyed that they don't put it forth on TV.
Cause like,
and that's not... me, and I like the Dark Order.
Well, because it's not like anything that they've done on TV resembles anything of comedy.
No.
One time. So how would anybody know that that's... And I from what I've read and heard, and I've seen some BT stuff, they do a really good job of kind of adding layers to a story with a lot of the undercard characters.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to fill us in with that on the show. Like, give us something. So
yeah, give us something. Like,
I'm happy for Anna Jay, though.
I'm perfectly happy for Anna Jay. I mean, I wish that, like, the lady that they had were, like, a better wrestler. I wish that it were someone that I wanted the women's division to be built around instead of... I mean, no shade to Anna Jay, but she's very new. She's not been doing this long.
And then, so she's part of this cult... who are apparently funny on the internet, and then she goes and gives Tenara Conte a join us thing, and Tenara Conte, I'm begging for some cohesion, just somewhere. I mean, just give me something.
Yeah, because Brody Lee is like, you know, Anna Jay is 99. She is the goddess. I don't remember if he said goddess, but she's like, she's important basically. Like, she seems to be his right hand lady. Like, she is his Miss Tessmacher, I guess, which is fine. I don't really know why, but that's fine. I'm into it. Like, as a character thing, I'm into it. I know that Anna Jay matches are not going to be, like, amazing either. I kind of like Anna Jay recruiting Tay Conchi because it's like, hey, we were tag partners in this thing, and you can be in our group, and having more ladies in the group would be good. And it's... you know, like, it is a story, and you can involve more women's division stuff in the story that way. So it feels like they have a lot of building blocks that could go together well. I just think they don't know how to put those pieces together into a coherent story. And, like, this 8-man tag here on Dynamite, I didn't care. Like, I just didn't care that much. And I don't know, there's just something about the Natural Nightmares that they're fine. Like, they're fine. I just don't feel much of a connection to them. And I know that I should be raging about Dark Order, like, taking out Cody and all that stuff, so it makes sense that Dustin is pissed at Brody Lee and pissed at the Dark Order because they took out his brother. I like that storytelling in theory. It's just not, like, emotionally resonating with me the way that I wish it would.
I think it's because, like, QT Marshall is just kind of, no matter how good he is or how good of a trainer he is, like, the audience don't really know who he is or why he's
Yeah, he's so, like, dude with Apple.
Yeah, dude with Apple who got a hair transplant and now is starting to have hair in his head again. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, and so it feels kind of below dusted. And then Scorpio Sky's out here on his own, but he's with SCU.
And Scorpio Sky, like, when he came out, I was just like, wow, I forgot about you.
But, like, I mean, maybe this, because I'm, but why is Scorpio Sky out there on his own?
Yeah, where's the rest of SCU?
Now... Later on in the show, we had Big Swole against Britt Baker, Reba, and Penelope Ford. Oh, dear God.
And Britt Baker's still in her wheelchair.
I felt like I needed to be in a wheelchair by the end of this. Like, it was so bad.
It was not good.
And, like, I was into this story.
I like the shenanigans. Like, I was here for some of the shenanigans and stuff. It's just, this was very clunky.
Very clunky. And the other thing is, and I'm... I know this might come across the wrong way. To Kip Sabian, you're not going to get big being the fall joke guy in these kind of matches. Like, Sabian needs to figure something out.
Well, I love that role for him, though. Like, I think he's doing it really well.
Well, he's doing it really, but, like, Penelope Ford...
I mean, he's not going to be world champion with this gimmick, absolutely not. But I, like, think that him as Penelope's valet is kind of a fun gender role reversal. And I like that they're each other's valets, and... I don't know. Like, I don't know Kip Sabian, so I don't really care. I enjoy what he's doing.
And then Penelope Ford, she'd had that really good match last month, so we thought that we were on the way. And then, I mean, Reba is supposed to be a professional wrestler, and I just would like to see some credentials.
I mean, she is, but you know, like the thing is, none of the women in this match are women who are like great at leading a match because they're not. I mean, I haven't seen much of Rebel Wrestling, so I can't really say there. Penelope Ford, I think, is very talented, but I think that it, you know, it takes a long time to be able to lead a match and feel confident doing that. Big Swall, I think, is great. But again, like, she's still newer at this and not, like, she's not going to be a ring general at this point. Like, even Britt Baker's not great at that. So it's, this is more of a character situation. The match wasn't going to be amazing. There were some really questionable spots for sure, like where there was just some falling down. But I don't know, like, it's also kind of not their fault because they're being put in a position without someone who can really lead it, right? Like, we've seen Penelope Ford is capable of having good matches when she can be led through it. Hikaru Shida's amazing, so of course it was going to be a lot better.
I mean, this match went 2 minutes and 50 seconds. If you can make that many mistakes in 2 minutes,
it was just a clusterfuck. It was just a clusterfuck.
But at the same time, like, I mean, I'm glad there is a second woman's story, but grim.
I am too, and like, this was more about the shenanigans than the wrestling being good, and I think the characters are pretty over, so that was helpful.
And then the main event of the show was Matt Hardy.
Because you can't tell me that this match was like significantly worse than like Lita versus Jacqueline on Retro Raw that we're watching this week.
No, I think the difference is that they're not. See, with Lita, Lita's so terrible, but she's over. Mm-hmm. And when you're over, it just kind of, you get away with stuff.
And you know, but I feel like Big Swall is pretty over, and Britt Baker's for sure are over. So I think the story is over, and that's why. I don't know. That's why it worked enough for me, even though the wrestling was bad.
I'm happy for them. And then the main event was Matt Hardy and Sammy Guevara in a tables match. Sammy Guevara was able to beat Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy was dressed like regular Matt Hardy again, but he was also doing delete stuff. And I'm not too sure what's going on with him.
I don't know if Matt Hardy is quite sure who Matt Hardy is at this point.
But luckily, even though the tables match was just kind of blah, like, the post-match, we saw Orange Cassidy attack Jericho from behind and just came out of nowhere. And there's a big brawl, and JR and Tony are trying to get out of the way, and they're fighting. And thank God for Chris Jericho and Orange Cassidy at the end of the show, because they, you know, after we'd sat and watched the 3-on-1 match and then the tables match just didn't really pack a punch, I needed the show closing brawl.
I don't know, the tables match wasn't, like, awful, and seeing Sammy Guevara get a win was, I don't know, interesting, I thought. And he had that big old gash on the side of his face. So it was like, Matt Hardy is like, hey, you made blood come out of my head. Now you're going to have blood come out of your head in retribution. And it did not look like it was supposed to happen. So I don't know, like, I like seeing Sammy Guevara get a win, I guess. Like, Matt Hardy doesn't feel like this big, epic Matt Hardy that he should. But the Jericho-Orange Cassidy confrontation was great. Orange Cassidy coming out and attacking Chris Jericho and, you know, like, the whole thing with Orange Cassidy is he's supposed to not care about anything. He's supposed to be lazy, and he is, until someone gets under his skin. And Chris Jericho has obviously gotten under his skin, and now we have motivated Orange Cassidy, and I'm so here for it. And I know that we've been maybe a little underwhelmed by their actual matches, but I think the build and the story has been great, and I'm really looking forward to Mimosa Mayhem, because I don't know what that's going to mean, but it sounds like shenanigans.
I'm excited about it. I don't have a clue what they're going to do, but look, the last time when they did Stadium Stampede, how great that was.
Oh, so, it was amazing.
But overall Dynamite just, it wasn't quite as good as the usual Dynamites that we get for various reasons. But the MJF,
I think, and we're just ready to be at All Out, and we have one more Dynamite in the middle of it. We'll see how this week goes, I suppose. I'm looking forward to All Out. Like, I'm not as jazzed about All Out as I have been in years past. But, like, well, I say years past, there's only been one. But
As in year past.
Like, I was slightly more jazzed about it last year when we were there in Chicagoland. which I'm seeing so many pictures of this week, and it's just making me sad. But I'm just like, remember when we could hang out with friends and go to wrestling shows? That was so much fun. Oh, it feels like, I feel like that woman in the Titanic, it's been 84 years since I last was able to do these things. But yeah, like I am excited for All Out. I'm excited for a lot of the stories leading into it, and I think it's going to be great.
That's pretty much it for us. We will be covering All Out, as always, on Patreon. But Sandra, what are the plugs?
Okay, you can find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Find us on Instagram. I'm at SandraRuth. He's at MCINTOKNNY at Inside_the Ropes on Instagram as well. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes is where you can hear us talk about loads of bonus content. We're talking about Payback. We're going to be talking about All Out. We talked about SummerSlam last week because there are pay-per-views every week now. You can also get Retro ITR with Kenny and Finn and me talking about SummerSlam 2000, which I thought was a great show. I had a blast watching that. So all of that's available on Patreon, and that really is the best way to support us, like, as far as having any sort of income to pay for the podcast. It's brought to you by you, basically, is what I'm trying to say. So thank you for everyone who supports us there. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes is where you can find video content, interviews, clips from our live event shows. Again, remember when we could do live event shows? Those were good times. But clips going up there all the time. Like, subscribe, do all of the things that helps the algorithm tell more people about us and say, hey, they make good wrestling videos. You should watch them. And then you can also go to InsideTheRopesMagazine.com. Is that the actual address? Did I get it right?
You did. You can go there and sign up. You can subscribe for a year subscription, or you can just order the first issue. There is a magazine happening. We are in it. It's very strange.
It's very strange, but it's very exciting. It's a good strange. It's a happy strange. It's an exciting strange.
You made it into The Observer for the first time this week.
I know. My actual name was in The Observer. It was very weird. Like, I was very not used to seeing that. Kenny's gotten used to it finally over the years. I am not used to seeing my name in print, and it was really cool. The magazine is really exciting. I'm really looking forward to reading the first issue because, like, I'm not someone that grew up with wrestling magazines. Obviously, I didn't grow up with wrestling. But I've read a couple of Kenny's old Power Slam ones. And they're really cool, and I don't know, the cover just looks so good, and it's all very exciting. So go to InsideTheRopesMagazine.com to either sign up for a subscription or to order the first digital issue. We do ship to international places, so even if you live in dumb America like me, you can get the magazine. It's exciting.
Yeah, you can get the print copy. You can order the print copy now. You can order a subscription now. Digital will be available on the day of release each month. So if you want to just get the digital version September 17th and then whatever the next dates will be, then you can check that out. So very exciting. I am absolutely buzzed about all of it. So here to play us out, though, is MJF, because he killed it on this contract signing this week. And he is on his way to a world title match at All Out. So... As Sandra said, thanks for all your support. We really appreciate it, and we will talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.
I'm better than you, and you know it.